The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hunter. By popular demand, I'm delighted again to be able to speak to Gervais William of Premier Might and one of the UK's finest small and mid-cap investors. So welcome, Gervais.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Now, a lot's been happening since we last spoke, not least the strong inflation prints out in the States and the labour market, both this side and over the North Atlantic in America as well. But that sort of like pushed up interest rates and bond yields. So putting all that together, what's your sort of outlook for equities at the moment?
Yes, I think actually inflationary pressures probably are peaking out and already falling away. And if we continue to have high interest rates, and indeed quantitative tightening, I suspect that inflation will fall away, possibly below zero for a short period. So I think the inflationary pressures in the short term have gone away, but I think the longer term prognosis is that they will return off and on like a bad penny in the future. And I think that makes a profound difference to asset markets. Specifically, I think valuations will return to past norms, i.e. bond yields will be higher than they were previously. And secondly, I think profit margins, which have been extraordinarily high over the last sort of 10 and 20 years, will peak out and start to come back to prior norms too. The bottom line is I think that it's going to get pretty tough, actually, for equity markets to deliver commercial returns. You know, we've had a sort of permanent summer. It's not like we'll have a permanent winter, but I just think it'll be a more unsettled period. And therefore, I think actually smaller quoted companies with their intrinsic ability to grow even when the world's more unsettled, it is quite exciting. I'm tremendously upbeat for the UK stock market to outperform with its equity bias. And I'm particularly upbeat for the potential for some of the smaller quoted companies, the microcaps, to outperform what may be an outperforming market. I'm more optimistic now than I've been for about 30 years.
Oh, good. That's great to hear. I mean, likewise with you in terms of, you know, the economic outlook may not be great, but the valuation reset for a lot of UK small and mid-caps has just been so extreme. And so in terms of sort of M&A, we've had quite a few sort of overseas buyers and private equity. Do you see that trend continuing as if prices actually stay where they are in small and mid-caps?
I mean, our valuations are extraordinarily low. The UK stock market is on a lower valuation than the US stock market, quite a big discount. And many of the smaller quoted companies, which unfortunately have had pretty weak share prices in the last 2 years, are standing at even lower valuations. So I wholly endorse your valuation. I think the valuations are extraordinarily low. Interesting enough, although I think there will be acquisitions, I think particularly for some of the private equity firms, I think many of the UK quoted companies, particularly the smaller microcaps, are too small in ticket size for them to get involved. Right. So actually, fortunately, and I think it's a good thing, I think many of the companies at the bottom end of the market won't be acquired. There will be some corporate acquisitions by some of the other competing companies, but I don't think it'll be a kind of wall-to-wall period of acquisitions. Specifically, I'm very pleased about that because I think the upside potential for many of these companies is much greater in a listed form than it is in a takeover form. So we're, if anything, encouraging many of our investments to sort of tell potential takeovers to go away.
Mm. Well, not just switching gears, one sort of like theme that's really captured sort of investors' attentions and the market is all things artificial intelligence, particularly sort of things, you know, regenerative ChatGPT like. What's your sort of like initial thoughts in terms of sort of like the outlook for equities of sort of like bringing that theme into sort of like your stock picking?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it is actually quite a big change. It's a bit like when Google first invented, you know, easy search. You know, suddenly a new area has been opened up to corporates and indeed consumers. Specifically, I think there was opportunities to reduce costs through AI. Ultimately, I think most businesses will find that there's opportunities to use AI to improve their efficiencies. But ultimately, I think like many other things, I think, you know, there'll be a jostling around, competition will come in, margins will resume to commercial outcomes. And I think although there is, you know, investment to be done, and those companies with very substantial sort of amounts of data can use AI very effectively. I think in a way, you know, the bigger changes are going to come from the corporate background, i.e., you know, potential recessions, potential insolvencies. I think those factors are much bigger than AI. So don't get me wrong, I think AI is a big news, but I think there's plenty of other big news stories alongside it.
I'm guessing longer term, actually, AI and technology in more broadly should help some or offset some of that inflationary pressure in terms of sort of like, you know, longer term. But that's been the feature really for the last few decades, I guess.
Yes, I mean, if you look at money supply in the US with the bearing down on inflationary pressures, you know, as you know, central banks around the world are seeking to reduce demand. And in doing that, they've been, you know, reducing money supply, specifically in the US, the M2 money supply. It's falling at the fastest rate since the Great Depression. If we didn't have any interest rate peaking and if interest rates didn't come down smartly next year, I think there's a danger we get deflation or even depression. I don't think it's very likely. I think the Fed is going to change its policies. But at the moment, you know, we've got as much risk in deflation as we have in as inflation at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's just look to some stocks, particularly in sort of like, you know, pharma and healthcare. And let's kick off with a very popular one for investors, which is Avacta, which does sort of like all things cancer therapeutics and also diagnostics. In fact, I think it's been building up just recently. It's diagnostics division with a couple of acquisitions of Launch and I think it's Coris BioConnect. And there's obviously been taking a lot of its AVA 6000 Pro Doxorubicin drug through its phase 1A and phase 1B. And I know we've talked about it. What's your sort of latest view anyway for Avacta?
Yes, I mean, I think we should all be very pleased with the early data from the early therapeutics AVA 6000, specifically, you know, there's very little adverse reaction at this stage in terms of doxorubicin, which means that if trials go well from here, then clearly it may be a therapy which, when it comes to cancer, they can use a number of extra cycles. At the moment, you're limited typically to quite a limited number of cycles per treatment. And unfortunately, that doesn't always rid you of cancer. It gives you a degree of management, but it doesn't rid you of cancer. Clearly, if they can use it numerous times, hopefully with less side effects, particularly on your heart, then ultimately that could be very, very good news. Clearly a long way to go from here, but it's terrific to have such good news. Alongside that, I'd probably highlight the AffyXL joint venture, which has also been attracting quite a lot of interest, potential investors coming in, generally data coming through, extended the joint venture to include further therapeutics. So from that point of view, again, excellent news. And as you say, to some degree, I think the testing business gets a little overlooked in the excitement. And again, as you say, with the acquisition of Corin, that's been good news. So coming back to it, I think, you know, I think there's plenty of going on in this business. And as with many other companies, the share price is fairly low because people, you know, aren't focusing in on smallness at the moment. It's the largest quoted companies which seem to be outperforming, not just in the UK, but around the world.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a major inflection sort of event, isn't there, or potential value catalyst towards the back end of this year when they enter sort of like phase 1B for that AVA 6000 and they start trying to get some of the efficacy data and reach a sort of like a optimum dosage level for that pro-doxorubicin, then that will be could really change the dynamic. Now, just again, switching to sort of like medical devices, Polarian Imaging, which was a darling during the pandemic, has come off a lot, but did sign a transformational, potentially transformational sort of like non-exclusive agreement with Philips for MRI scanners and to sort of bring Polarian sort of like XenoView technology with the gas to combine it, retrofit it with the MRIs. What's your sort of like your view on that? Because that really could be a over the next 2, 3, 4 years, that could make a lot of difference.
Yes, it's interesting. I mean, I think to some degree, investors have been quite confident that the technology here is literally world leading. I think that's been endorsed by its relationship and its joint venture now with Philips, which is great news. But most particularly, I think, you know, what we see, as with many other smaller quoted companies, is that their share price has been fairly weak in the last couple of years, along with most other global markets. And if anything, therefore, the upside potential for this company going forward is potentially all the greater. Coming back to your point, the key is that, you know, there was a technology risk in this company. We think that's been reduced. And indeed, you know, they're making good progress towards the launch of their products and ultimately significant revenue. Yeah. That's the key driver of share price, I think, longer term.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have thought if they do have world-leading technology, which has, to say, been endorsed by the FDA or approved, at 55 million market cap, if you added it to one of the world's largest MRI scanners, which is Philips or anybody else, I mean, it just makes so much strategic sense with regards to synergistic value. But hey, I'm just an outside investor looking in.
Well, not just that, but I mean, the whole point about many of these smaller micro-cap growth companies is that they actually, they have, you know, potentially, you know, good upside potential. It's nice that they might go up 30 or 50% in share price at some stage going forward. But specifically, they also, many of these companies have sort of an inbuilt option value upside that they could rise by a multiple of their current market cap. And that's really what you were just touching on there. And that's tremendously exciting. If we are looking at perhaps, you know, future equity markets sort of flatlining to some degree, we saw this in the 70s when the sort of mega cap outperformance came to an end. That was the Nifty 50 in the 70s. A lot of markets flatlined thereafter, and small quoted companies have the ability to generate return even at a time when global markets are flatlining. That's the upside potential, which we're excited about.
Yeah. Another one in the sort of medical devices is Inspiration Healthcare, which again has sort of come off a lot of late, and it does sort of neonatal sort of ICU units for sort of like pre, basically babies who are born early, etc. They do warming and ventilation. Plus, I think they've got an infusion devices business as well on the side of it, which is more of a distribution side. What's your sort of latest view on that business? Because again, the share's what, trading around about 45p. Looks extremely lowly valued.
Yes, I think the thing to highlight in this case is they've set up a new manufacturing and testing centre. A lot of investment that's come on stream. Again, that gives them much more capacity to deal with customers. It gives them much more opportunity to demonstrate to customers the strength of their products, which they describe as pioneering and best in class. I think we're happy to endorse that. So coming back to it, I mean, here's a business, again, small market cap, substantial upside, overlooked valuation. If we do get capital beginning to sort of waterfall down the market cap range from the very largest companies into mid and small caps, then these are the kind of companies we think could actually rise considerably in that kind of period.
On a 10 times PE multiple, you think it's just for a medical devices company, you think it's just totally mispriced. But that's just the optics. Now moving to Totally, and I know we've talked about this firm. It does the 111 system for the NHS. It's a big sort of partner helping the NHS get through its elective procedures, mounting patient waiting lists, etc., and obviously urgent care, and also it's in sourcing. The shares again are sort of like, you know, traded down, and I think it looks unfairly traded down just because they've been struggling a bit to get healthcare professionals, recruit them, because it's so difficult and to get the manpower. But you know, they seem to be, you know, doing everything they need to do.
Yeah, so importantly, I think service levels are very significant here. You know, they're not all of the 111 service. They do sometimes part of it, but not all of it. And clearly, they've had a renewal of contract there, which implies that the service levels are good or excellent, which is just as we'd like them to see. They've got a potential to do some extra work on some of the waiting lists in specific sort of types of care, where they can work in hospitals with the staff over the weekends to catch up trades. And that, again, is very exciting. Coming back to it, I mean, what's interesting about this company, in contrast to perhaps some of the others, is it's generating substantial cash at the moment. It's paying a very generous yield, about a 5% yield. It is not a very high loan valuation, and it's forecast to generate quite a lot of profit growth this year, so P ratio goes down considerably. We feel pretty sorry for companies which are already in cash generative self-funding mode, that their valuations have been hit so severely. Wendy Lawrence, the CEO, has, I think she's done a great job, and I think she's just not getting the credit for the work she's done.
Yeah, it's a total head scratcher with a PE of less than 5 and cash on the balance sheet. It just looks absolutely nuts to me. But I suppose that comes back to the point that you made. Even though the sort of economic backdrop may be tough in the short term, actually the valuations make you far more optimistic. And you say, you know, the most optimistic has been for 30 years because there's so much good value out there. And those are just a few of them. Now, moving to the energy sector, one which has just knocked the ball out of the park and continues to do so is U Group, which does sort of like utilities, energy, power, electricity, etc., for small, medium-sized companies in the UK. And what's sort of like been the trigger that's just absolutely sort of been like a rocket fuel to the company over the last 2 years?
Yes, it's very interesting, isn't it? Because here's a small microcap, which actually has had a valuation move. But most others haven't. So it stepped out from the crowd. And in that regard, I think what's happened is it's not just announced good figures. It's not just had good upgrades. Some of the others have as well. But specifically, when you look at the cash generative potential for this business, you see it's actually, according to the Liberum forecasts, could generate very considerable cash in the next 2 or 3 years. Already, it's got about 18 million of cash on the balance sheet. Its market cap, at the recent upgrades was only 70 or 80 million. It's now moved over 100 again. But most particularly, if you leave it to its, you know, to its current expansion plans, you know, according to Liberum, it could have over 70 million of cash in the next couple of years. I mean, I think obviously, you know, when you've got that much surplus cash, it even at a time when microcaps are so overlooked and there are general redemptions across the UK stock market through the UK OEICs, it's meant that this share price has actually been able to buck the trend to generate absolute gains. Again, coming back to the potential, again, it doesn't look highly valued on the potential. It's growing at a terrific rate at the moment. It's a utility. It's been through a stress test with the energy prices in the last last couple of years and come through with shining colours. And it's taking market share against many of the majors, you know, the Aeons and Eons and sort of British Gases and that kind of thing. And so, you know, we think it's got terrific potential and we're tremendously excited. We continue to remain tremendously excited about its potential.
Yeah. How's it winning in market share? Is it basically just better customer service and pricing? I mean, the simple things.
Yeah, I'm glad you emphasised customer service, because actually we think that if there is profit margin pressure to come, and if we assume that the profit margin increases we've seen during the period of globalisation come under pressure as debt is repaid and as you know, supply exceeds demand, then you've got real problems that some companies may find that although they grow sales, that their profit margins go down and they don't generate much extra profit. What's really important in our view is you select for companies which don't just deliver good but outstanding levels of service. In our view, U Group is one of those companies. And again, against some relatively sort of steady but unexciting competition, they've got the opportunity to take what we consider to be much greater market share than they have at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, absolutely. That's what they're demonstrating. I mean, challenger brand, they're knocking the ball out of the park. Now, just moving to sort of oil and gas, I3 Energy, which has sort of like quite a lot of sort of hydrocarbon reserves out in Canada, I think, in the sort of the, you know, the basins out there. Their shares obviously did well last year and they've sort of come off, but they trade again at round about sort of like 7x PE. And I was just looking at the balance sheet and they haven't really got much debt now, actually.
And they pay a very generous yield. I mean, if you know, they raised capital back in 2020 at 5p.
Yeah,
share price is 18p now.
Okay,
but their yield on the original entry price is something like 21% or 22%. So clearly, their share price isn't 5p. To be fair, it is 18p, and it's been higher, as you say, last year. There has been some worries about, you know, energy prices coming off. There is some concerns that, you know, global slowdown from the raise of interest rates, the recovery of China has been perhaps less buoyant than we might have expected. And it could be, if interest rates have to go higher and if inflation remains stickier than perhaps I assume, that you know, global slowdown will be more abrupt than we hope. But that's affected energy prices. We've seen share prices in most of the smaller quoted companies coming under real pressure, not just because energy prices have reduced. Clearly, tax increases and also have had an effect, although it doesn't affect this company. But what's been interesting is the mega caps, you know, the Shells and BPs, have been holding up so much better than many of the smaller quota companies. Therefore, the recovery potential, the valuations, the ability to generate good and growing dividends better than many of the mega caps is all, you know, just another demonstration of the opportunities for investing across a wide range of different companies in the microcap sector, which actually have the ability to generate returns which are less correlated with each other. And that's it's the diversity of our portfolio together with the upside potential of them, which is the feature which really I think is going to become more important for investors in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, if you get a company like I3 Energy that, and even Total, that pays a sort of like a very attractive dividend yield, you get upside capital growth potentially over the long term as well. I mean, it just seems like because you know, potential multiple expansion, it's got all the ingredients. I just say that's why you're optimistic, and I am likewise. Now, another one with sort of like really good sort of entrepreneurial management is Supreme, which does sort of like I think it's sort of its main division is its vaping, 88 Vape, and Liberty Flights, I think, and they also does batteries and lighting and sports nutrition. And it went through sort of like a bit of a tougher period last year, as it suffered a bit of supply chain and high inflation, etc. But that seems to be coming together. It's right-sized its balance sheet, and I think the vaping business, which sort of targets the sort of like 40-year-olds, I think, is that, you know, that sort of a demographic, is absolutely flying, doing really, really well.
Yes, again, what's interesting about this company isn't just that it's got relatively good service levels to its corner, you know, corner shops, which is principally it's fruit to market. It does sell through supermarkets. It sells direct, actually. It also supplies the prison service, among others. But what's interesting, of course, is it's got a low-cost supply. It manufactures its own vapes, specifically in its own plant in Manchester. And it's the ability to generate cash on relatively low pricing, which means that actually it's taking market share quite rapidly. So that's the most rapid growth area, the vaping area. But they do have real excitement in some of their other areas. Some of the mature businesses, like you say, the batteries and lighting, maybe it's just good cash generators. But particularly on the nutrition side of things, they've got real ambition to take considerable market share, again, at very low pricing, against some relatively high price competition. So it's a company which generates cash. The cornerstone of all future earnings is not just the earnings, but particularly the ability to generate cash and not rely on markets to supply capital. And if you can do that, then you can fund your growth and particularly pay dividends. And ultimately, your share prices can recover considerably going forward at a time when others who are under real pressure could not just see tough trading conditions, but could become insolvent. We do unfortunately expect quite a few private businesses with over borrowed balance sheets to get into financial difficulty, and quite a few of those could go bust. And that will allow some of the quoted companies with their stronger balance sheets to move into these markets and take extra market share.
Yeah. And again, as I say, with a PE of less than 10, generating cash. And I think what people fail to realise with sort of vaping is the NHS has just decided to fund or give away sort of 1 million free vaping devices to get people off tobacco. So, it actually has a lot of big health benefits to it, even though obviously, you get some negative press in terms of, sort of underage. But as long as we can stamp out the rogue, sort of like, vape people who sell these vaping devices, then and it goes to the people who should actually need it, then it seems like a no-brainer to me.
Yes, I mean, PLCs particularly are going to be very interested in their reputational sort of interest in their business. And I think Supreme are very good, actually, at making sure that their customers are well organised to avoid children buying underage.
Yeah, they are. I'd agree. And another one which has got lots of sort of very good entrepreneurial sort of like, talents on board is Lords Group Trading and the building materials. And again, that whole sector has just been totally forgotten and just left for dead, I think. I mean, you look at the valuations and they're 30-40% below what sort of like, mid ratings you'd have expected. Sort of headed up by Shankar Patel, I think it is. And they still seem to be doing pretty well in terms of supplying, as a building merchant and sort of heating and plumbing products into the UK.
Yes, I mean, again, I think they've held up pretty well. It's been a slightly difficult time to secure certain products. I think that's particularly affected their plumbing and heating business last year. They were struggling to get supplies, and that did hold up sales. It did lead to less sales than they had originally hoped. And most particularly, the other business, the building materials business has done pretty well, but the share price has come down with uncertainty about the plumbing and heating business. They report that actually supplies are coming back on stream. They have actually made extra margin during the difficult period. So although profits were affected, they weren't perhaps affected as much as you might have assumed. But again, coming back to it, the share price has been quite weak. It's on a valuation of only 8 or 9 times at the moment. It's got a yield. Specifically, it's got ambitions to grow its sales considerably to over 500 million and generate an EBITDA margin of over 7.5%. So if it achieves those targets over the next few years, clearly the profits could rise, the cash generation could rise, and hopefully that will drive a revaluation upwards of the share prices.
Yeah. And a lot of the big house builders as well. I mean, I know that 80% of Lord's revenues come from RMI, but the other sort of 20% new build housing, all the house builders are actually saying they're seeing better, stronger outlook for the second half. So as the availability of mortgages increase and people are still in employment and therefore, want houses because there is a huge deficit, isn't there? I mean, it's going to be a political hot potato at the general election between the Tories and the Labour, who can actually achieve 300,000 new build houses a year compared to 200,000, which is what they're currently doing.
That's right. I mean, there's real urgent need to extend the number of household housing projects so that actually you generate more households. Clearly, a large part of that will be on the public side, publicly funded, as well as the private sector. But most particularly, the private sector has now got real potential to kind of accelerate growth because the supply constraints have come out and they can increase supply. So maybe they get lower margins, but they can do extra supply. And coming back to the suppliers, such as Lords, obviously that would be good news for them.
Yeah. Now, just again, moving on to sort of technology and all things sort of EV, etc. We've got Saietta, who again was sort of like another darling during the lockdowns. I think it's met all its most of its commercial targets, and it's now coming up to sort of like commercializing and production. I think coming up in Q3, it sort of like basically does e drives and e motors for 2 and 3 wheelers out in India, and also it does sort of like heavy duty e-drive systems for trucks and trailers out in the US, or is thinking about doing last mile deliveries as well. So it's got lots of sort of like different moving parts, but the shares have been obviously knocked considerably, even though it should be starting to making some quite serious revenues in the back end of this calendar year.
Yes, I mean, it raised considerable capital in the middle of last year for the Convent, yeah. Which is about the truck hub. Basically, it's energy collection. It can be used as an energy source in terms of drive as well, but particularly energy collection in trailers. And again, that's pretty exciting, albeit that it has, to be fair, reported slightly slower progress than might have expected, but maybe one of the reasons the share price has come down. But coming back to the core business, which, as you say, is supplying motors, particularly to Indian manufacturers, it's now confirmed a major customer. It's getting into production, which is great. It's got ongoing discussions with 7 other OEMs in India, which may or may not lead to further sales growth. So you've actually got much, the company's progressed. The company's in a much stronger position now in terms of progress than it was perhaps a year ago, in spite of the fact that, the excitement of the potential is still, longer term, very, very exciting. So the share price has been absolutely terribly weak. Again, this does reflect small micro caps. It does reflect worries about, redemptions across the UK market. And we have seen it sort of stabilize a bit. It has still got surplus cash in the balance sheet at the moment, which it'll be investing over the next 2 years. We remain, you've got to remember this company, if you go back a couple of years, at the end of 2021, December 21, it was capitalized at 215 million market cap. It's 44, in spite of raising additional capital for another major, venture in the US.
Yeah. And I think investors, if they take a sort of like a longer term view, I mean, the partners that Saietta has attracted are absolutely tier one, copper bottom, blue chip type of groups. And they would not go with sort of like a UK e-drive system unless they had good technology and they could actually deliver it as well, the execution. So, I think the direction of travel is moving in the right path. It's just you've got to be patient, isn't it, as you say. And the market sometimes doesn't see that. They just basically react. Another one, Ensilica, which does sort of like customized silicon chips, large, I think, for mixed signal, for RF and for digital as well. Is this going to be a sort of like effectively a play on accelerated computing? Because as essentially, people have to upgrade into new applications, etc., then they want specific chips for sort of like to meet their power requirements and to be able to do things specifically for what they... It seems to be in the right place at the right time. But again, the shares have been sort of knocked of late.
Yes, I mean, it came to market, actually. And one of the few companies to achieve an IPO last year, one of the few companies to achieve an IPO and see its share price go up after issue, which was a
unusual,
significant success from that point of view. And as you mentioned, it's an application, ASIC, ASIC. So these are ASIC chips, which are application specific, which means that they, each different motor manufacturer, they're not just in motor manufacturers, but they do have some motor manufacturers as customers, will have, their range of cars, and they want to differentiate their range of cars from others by having certain technologies in terms of, on the driving wheel and all the rest of it. So coming back to it, they each need their own. This company has really been based on consultancy in the past, but it's doing a lot of work with a number of these ASICs, which when they come on stream, perhaps the next 2 or 3 years, will then generate very significant revenues for the company in future. So it's been investing hard. It's got a number of new customers, a number of new contract wins and contract extensions since issue have been actually really quite exciting. It has raised a little bit more capital along the way to fund ongoing growth. But most particularly, as you say, I think the opportunity for these kinds of companies to generate, not just revenue, but profits and cash in future years, again, just underlines the nature of the overlooked potential of many of these microcaps. And again, You know, share price did peak out after it came to market, partly because it raised new capital. But we think, again, it's got those kind of the credentials, immature cash generation, which is what gets us most excited about the future.
Yeah. And you'd have thought, as I say, with new technology being pushed in, particularly sort of AI and stuff, it's going to lead to an upgrade cycle for the whole industry. And that will be across ASIC chips as well, because it will require a different type of ASIC chip, which would be greater capability. So, and just one thing actually also just to note, because I mean, again, a feature of a lot of the companies you invested is the founder or the CEO has still got quite a bit of equity skin in the game. I think Ian Lanks has got around about 20% still. Is that a positive? Is that how you view it?
Yes. I mean, I think what's interesting is often when you're looking at things about climate change and worry about ASICs and things like that, then effectively you are looking for companies which are in a position to, you know, not just to actually, you know, grow their business, not just generate cash, but actually be really motivated about some of the bigger issues. A lot of people think, well, you know, with Shell, I don't know how many they've got in their ESG department, but they might have 50 on their sustainability, reports and all the other things they do. Many of these smaller quota companies have many fewer people, perhaps just one or even half a day a week or something. But coming back to it, the motivation of many of these companies to actually address these issues, and indeed in conjunction with their shareholders, in the case of large quoted companies, clearly most fund managers only have a very small percentage of the total company. When it comes to smaller quota companies, particularly microcaps, you know, our clients tend to have a much larger percentage. So we can negotiate with them, what features to prioritize in terms of dealing with climate change and such like. Again, so I think although the data on climate change from many of these small quota companies is not very, you know, it's not as great as it is on the mainstream companies, I think if anything, the motivation and the opportunity to make a difference is that much greater, actually. Again, another overlooked feature of smaller microcap quota companies.
Yeah. Now, just moving on to sort of Journeo, which is headed up by a guy called Russ Singleton, who I know from Synetics years and years ago. And basically, Journeo is a fairly small company, about 30 million market cap, which does sort of smart ticketing systems and display boards at Euston Station and all this sort of stuff. What's your sort of latest view on this one? Because obviously, railways continually need sort of upgrading their technology, as we see these guys working on the tracks all the time.
Yes, I mean, specifically, they're very much in signage, not just railways, buses and other features.
Yeah.
Again, as you get technology move out, you can give much more detailed data about when trains going to arrive, when buses are going to arrive, linking them both up and all the rest of it. It's a pretty exciting area. But I think specifically for Journeo, the acquisition of IGL at the end of last year or beginning of this year, when they issued shares at 105, was potentially transformational for them. It's a much more integrated offering. It's a much wider range of services. Specifically, what we've seen subsequently is them announce a number of pretty major contracts, which is pretty exciting. And again, in contrast to many other smaller microcap companies, I think with those very substantial upgrades and the quality of the acquisition, we've seen the share price buck the trend and actually appreciate this year, whereas obviously many microcaps have gone down. So its market cap back in 2020 was only 5 million. It's now about 27, as you say, nearly 30 million. So from that point of view, okay, it did raise 8.7 million at the beginning of this year. But in terms of, the upside, again, it's cash generative, growing its sales beautifully, long-term has, very strong market position, not just in the UK, but even internationally. It deals in the US as well as UK, for example, and in Europe. So, again, good businesses with very substantial opportunity generating cash. So they don't need external capital. That's a great combination for long-term investment, in our view.
And then again, just moving on to another one, Engage HR. This has been sort of highlighted by a number of investors to me, so I've had to sort of ask you about this one in particular. And they do sort of software for the metaverse, for VR and AR, etc. And I think they've got a link up with one of the big OEMs. I can't remember who it is, but they... They do sort of like the VR for sort of a training of corporates and for all different types. But I'm guessing the sort of trigger, and which has piqued a lot of investors' interest, is this potential sort of like the releasing of the metaverse with the amount of investment that Apple is going to be putting into the sector. And obviously Facebook now will have to respond as well. What's your sort of like, it's a very small company, 20 million pounds. What's your sort of like your view on Engage HR and how it sort of fits into this whole ecosystem?
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, I think just to emphasize, you know, it's a very small company, but it's doing deals with very big companies. You know, the deal you were talking about is one of the top PC manufacturers of the world. You know,
that's right.
They don't have, they could choose anyone to do a deal with. They chose to engage XR, which is amazing. And coming back to the, you know, the ability to wear, you know, the, these face masks, this gives, you know, the opportunity to actually make a big difference in terms of the sector, which is now rolling out, you know, with Apple's rollout announcements recently. Then this whole sector is becoming much more significant in terms of usage. And clearly, you've got to have product to actually put on these head masks. So coming back to it, I think they're, you know, I think their opportunities only improved. I think the negotiations and bringing of major partners is another key feature. But again, look at the market cap. I mean, it's just tiny. Yeah. And if it does succeed, the market cap could be considerably larger. As I say, it's not just a case of whether they get 30 or 50%. If they succeed, clearly they have the potential of rising at a much more significant degrees than that.
Yeah, you'd have thought sort of like with that Apple launch, it's just going to increase the interest and the demand from lots of sort of like industrial applications and corporate applications for this whole type of sort of ecosystem, because there's going to be so much more money being put in it. And once somebody in a vertical launches a product like this that really works, it's just going to lift the game. So, yeah, I think they're in the right, I think they're actually in the right place at the right time. But well, we'll wait and see. Another one in
I was going to, you know, to some extent, I mean, this is just reflects what's happened. We, you know, you have a lot of small quota companies which are, you know, doing the right things ahead of the market. And then as the market matures, then they get their big upside opportunity. And, and that's, you know, and these are sometimes not just, you know, regional opportunities. Some of these are global opportunities. And it sounds strange for tiny companies to have global opportunities, but that's the opportunities we see, not just in this case, but many others.
Yeah. And then you get your real re-rating, don't you? As people start sort of like thinking, crikey, this one is this company is really in the right place. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Well, I mean, I would emphasize that institutional investors, you know, a lot of institutional investors, you know, they have relatively short lists. They want, you know, to have some kind of liquidity in those holdings. So they do tend to overlook many of the very smallest quota companies, particularly those below 100 million market cap. And as they, you know, succeed, as they raise capital, as their market caps exceed 100 million, then 200 and 300, then they move into an investment universe where the institutional investors can become much more numerous. And again, that can drive further re-rating of the company at that stage. So there's a kind of virtuous spiral which can be created if you get the wind behind you.
Yeah. And then the same sort of thing in terms of sort of like, you know, training and VR and technology-based sort of like solutions is Pennant International, which has been around for ages. And I think it's sort of bread and butter has been in sort of defense and aerospace training of pilots and people like that. But again, this could be another huge, significant sort of upgrade cycle for that, for this whole industry, that if they can jump on board of it, then it could sort of drive significant demand, I guess. It's very small. It's about 15 million market cap.
Yes, there aren't many quota companies which actually deal in defence, especially the small quota market sector. It's held back in the past by an Ajax contract, which actually has been quite, you know, they've been, you know, not making generating any cash. It's been marginally loss making, and that's come to an end now, so that they can get on with it. But specifically, you know, we're quite excited by the potential for investing in a company like this, which actually there's going to be increasing investment. Unfortunately, you know, it is for defence rather than offence. But the point is, you know. There's real need to step up investment. You know, it's a big priority for government for defence going forward. And these kinds of companies not just have the opportunities to continue to grow their own business, but to merge with other businesses, to become bigger businesses in their own right. And as I say, most investors have very little opportunity to invest in the defence sector. So again, it's relatively unique. As you say, very overlooked at the moment, doing just fine, but most particularly, you know, could be a much more substantial business in the future.
Yeah, if they can lift and shift their cutting edge technology from the defence into other verticals, then that should be a home run. I mean, it's usually always the same. It's always, you know, the defence industry develops the most unbelievably good technology because it takes ages and to get the budgets, and then it's sort of commercialising that outside, isn't it? But
that's right. I mean, they work quite a lot on training for certain major contracts, and the, you know, particularly in the aerospace side. And again, you know, those kinds of training skills are needed just as much in the civil aircraft as they are in the defence aircraft.
Yeah. Another one which has done well over sort of like as the sort of the economy started to reopen is Hostel World, which is now a sort of like 180 million euro sort of market cap company. And I'm guessing this one has really benefited as sort of students and travellers have have sort of like decided to go back into put the backpacks on and to go sort of trekking in the foothills of Nepal and around Africa.
That's right. I mean, in contrast, perhaps to some of the aircraft, airlines which operate in this sector, which need very capital intensive business models. They need a very large number of aircraft, obviously, to grow their market share. This is a business which can roll out its website, make it easy for you to book hostels, but specifically it's overlaid and invested hard in its social media aspect of its hostel, which is brilliant. I mean, in our view, you know, it is better than many of the international, you know, booking agencies like Booking.com in the hostel world end of the market. And again, you know, this is a company which has succeeded. The share price has gone up to about 150 million market cap, as you mentioned. But let's just remember, it was valued at over 400 back in 2018. Okay, yeah. I know valuations have changed, and you know, valuations of, you know, interest rates now are much higher than they were then. But coming back to the point, you know, this is potentially a global leader again. You know, we're tremendously excited about them getting the payback on all that investment, generating surplus cash, and it's that surplus cash which then allows them not just to continue to invest, but also ultimately generate dividends and pay dividend yields and things in the future. So again, you know, a lot of these companies, as they mature, it's not just that their share prices go up. It's not just that they become, you know, global winners, but most particularly the ongoing success can be funded themselves without relying on external shareholders. Again, we think that's a tremendously favorable feature at a time when interest rates are more unsettled, when global economy is more unsettled, when the ability to raise capital may be more difficult. And it's those features which really drive our excitement in this case and others.
Yeah, well, I think the whole industry is doing very well at the moment, because certainly from looking at Heathrow's sort of like stats, flying stats of passengers going through the airport, they were rocket ship this morning. So it must have there's lots of people traveling, particularly to North America, actually, I think, at the moment. Now, one company that is looks ridiculous, another one which looks ridiculously valued, but it's slightly bigger, is TP ICAP, which is about a sort of like a £1.2 billion business. And for the last time I looked, I think it trades at roughly around about, six or seven times PE, with sort of like a, if you strip out the leases, it's got some, you know, no major sort of like, you know, cash or debt on its balance sheet, and it seems wrongly priced, because obviously it's the world's biggest interdealer broker, and it's got a sort of like a data analytics division, Parameta, as well. What's your sort of view on this one? Because the whole industry in this one, interdealer broker, does actually look really cheap.
Yeah, I mean, interesting enough, I think this is a kind of company which benefits from bond price volatility.
Yeah.
You know, we've had plenty of bond price volatility up to now. My own view is we're going to get plenty more. I don't think we're past the, I don't think it's going to stabilize in the way perhaps it did previously. So I think that's going to be good news for them in their core business. Coming back to their Parameta business, what's interesting about that is, if anything, you know, its valuation would be considerably higher on a standalone basis than this business. And so if it were to sell its business or bring in a joint venture or whatever, then that would obviously underline the value of the Parameta business, which, you know, could be worth a major part of the group, irrespective of the rest of the business, which, as you say, has attractive prospects and is generating cash and paying to good yields. So coming back to it, I mean, it just shows that even some very large companies, and I think particularly complex financials, so it's an area where quite a lot of the mainstream stock market investors, they can invest in relatively large, very liquid financial groups in all sorts of areas. And so they don't tend to move down to the small companies. And this is obviously 1.2 billion. So it's more of a mid-cap company than a small cap. But again, it stands on a valuation quite similar to many small and micro caps, actually. And that's really why we're involved. And we think the risk reward ratio is attractive. As I say, with Parameta, we don't know what's going to happen next, but they could find a way of it's crystallizing the value in that group. Yeah. And even if they don't, you know, it's got a very low valuation and a very attractive yield.
It's just
what we're looking for in investments, really.
Yeah, the cash, the dividend yield is well over 5%, I think. It just seems like if people want to get into a liquid share as a mid cap, then that one is fits the bill. Another one which is a sort of special situation that we've talked about is Trufin, which does sort of like software for supply chains and sort of like working capital and management for sort of like, you know, for SMEs, and sort of like struck a flagship deal with Lloyds and with Sage, actually, but certainly with Lloyds in terms of its Artago business. Do you want to take us through this one? Because the actual shares, even though they've actually been pretty much rock solid, actually, in the sort of like high 60s.
Yes, I mean, what's been interesting about this is that, you know, the acquisition of Artago was actually, it cost them a pound. They bought four businesses for a pound. So they're very good at sort of taking something which is, for whatever reason, struggled a bit, may have gone into insolvency, about debt free from the receiver, albeit that there's further investment to be made and working capital is required. So there is investment going on. But most particularly, you know, they take what has been difficult for someone else. And by investment, they generate something which is very cash generative going forward. And Satago is a good example of that. It, as you say, it's particularly helping in terms of factoring for debt for corporates, small corporates. And, you know, they were negotiating with some of the largest banks, including Lloyds, where they've announced a very large deal. And in due course, Lloyds have actually used their software to standardize much of their, in fact, I think most of their factoring businesses going forward, which are quite numerous in nature. So very exciting. Lloyds have underwritten the valuation of that subsidiary by putting cash in themselves. They've got a 20% shareholding, which helps. But most particularly, they've got three other £1 coins, which they've invested as well. And you've got opportunities for some of those to start generating very substantial returns in due course. Oxygen, particularly, they talk about a lot. They rejected an unsolicited bid for that subsidiary last year. They've got PlayStake, they've got Avertiv as well. So, you know, it's a very strong business. I think perhaps the share price has held up better than others in the microcap area because of the Lloyds announcements last year. The management team probably feel a bit aggrieved. The share price didn't go up more, but anyway, at least it hasn't gone down. That's a small plus, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm guessing if you get a sort of like greater visibility into the unbundling opportunity there, the realization, then, you know, people might start sort of like, but anyway, it's something to look forward to once you've got lots of sort of crown jewels there that potentially could be real valuation catalysts. Another one, Beeks Financial, which did very well during the lockdown, which does sort of like, I think it's sort of cloud services for high frequency traders for lots of the sort of the capital markets in New York and London and Frankfurt, I'm guessing. The shares have actually done reasonably well. They've come down a bit. What's your sort of latest view on this one?
Again, I mean, one of the purposes of investing across a wide range of companies is so you get companies which aren't correlated to each other. So again, this company doesn't have much correlation with the rest of our portfolio. It's not as cheap as many of the other quoted companies we've talked about today. It's got a better valuation. But what they have done is they have, you know, announced a major upgrade to their services, the Exchange Cloud offering for major exchanges, and it's allowed frequency trading, as you say, high frequency trading. But specifically, you know, they're looking to generate a considerable number of new orders on that. We've seen some early indications of that, but we haven't really seen the guts of that to come through. And so the opportunity for this company, not just to increase sales, but actually increase cash generation, and this is a fairly high margin business, remember, is pretty exciting. So from that point of view, we're pretty excited about the potential for this company and many others to continue to succeed. And it's that feature, which again, cash generative nature of it, being independent of markets, able to invest in its growth, even when others are struggling, as you get others moving into insolvency, for example, we think that's the really exciting feature. And many of these companies will make acquisitions. I don't know if Beeks will be one of those, but there will be some of their competitors which fall over and they can acquire those a bit like we were talking just now in Truefin. For £1 or very small amounts, they will have to invest cash alongside to invest in terms of working capital. But some of these deals won't just be enhancing, they could be very substantially enhancing to future profits and cash generation in the future.
Do they compete against the likes of AWS or Microsoft Azure, or they've got a very sort of like, you know, niche vertical that they look after in the capital markets? I mean, what is their USP? Is it really that focus, that lens into the capital markets that gives them that edge?
That's right. It's a solution really for large exchanges rather than the cloud offering itself. Clearly, cloud offering is, you know, is very, very well competed with AWS and Google and all the others. But the point is, they have an application specific feature which really is very exciting in terms of the service levels to their customers.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, just coming finally then to sort of like a counter-cyclical play, which is H&T, which is sort of the UK's largest sort of pawnbroker and jewellery retailer, and it got pledge book, etc. Do you want to take your latest on this one? Because I did see Ramsden's doing very well. So I'm guessing these guys are knocking the ball out of the park as well.
Yes. I mean, it's actually interesting. I mean, we've had so much change in terms of regulation from the FCA in terms of, you know, small amounts of borrowings, that actually the ability to borrow relatively small sums, and I'm talking about £300 or £500 rather than £3,000 or £5,000, is actually quite expensive now for many competitors. So there are many fewer opportunities for people to borrow. You know, to some extent, Harvey & Thompson, a pawnbroker, is quite an old-fashioned business. But the great advantage is that if you do need just an emergency fund when your car breaks down, you need to fix it before, you know, so you can keep going to work, and you can't get cash elsewhere, if you've got a, you know, a small keepsake at home, you can go and borrow those kinds of sums relatively easy, relatively quickly. And that means that ultimately you can, you know, get your car fixed, get back to work. Obviously, you need to save up again to get the keepsake back again. What's good about this company compared with most others is that actually they don't charge you any extra. Ramsden, I think, charge you extra to redeem early. These guys, if you want to go back in 3 weeks or 3 months, you've got that flexibility which suits you. But most particularly, that means you've got your safety margin again in place. Would you need to borrow money in the future? So I think especially at the bottom end for small amounts of money, this kind of area is actually growing at extraordinarily, you know, rapid rate at the moment. They've talked about very strong trading conditions. And so the valuation, again, low, like many other microcaps, not fully recognized, generating profits, generating a yield, you know, very overlooked, generating potential surplus cash in the next 2 or 3 years in significant amounts. We're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, and second-hand Rolexes manage to keep their value, don't they, through thick and thin, those guys?
They seem to continue to rise over the last 2 or 3 years in spite of interest rate rises. So yeah. That's been very good news.
Unfortunately, my Casio 999 doesn't have the same sort of a luster with that kind of thing.
It still may be worth something longer term. Don't throw it away. Yeah. Keep it for heirloom.
An artifact, yeah. So just right at the end, thanks for your time, Gervais. If anybody wants to sort of invest in the Premier Mite and funds, how best to do this?
Yes, I mean, clearly we've got a lot of data on our website. But specifically, most private investors or institutional investors tend to use a fund supermarket or a platform. Yeah. The best way to do it. There are some relatively low-cost platforms around, so don't just think of all the ones which you've heard of. Mm. There's an increasing number of low-cost platforms going forward. And we think actually self-directed investment is going to be a growing feature going forward. People putting money aside for their SIP so they've got control of it in the future. So from that point of view, we think there's great opportunity not just to invest, but specifically our view is that the UK stock market, with its kind of cash compounding mainstream stock market, is going to become more popular, particularly for pensions. And therefore, as investment comes into the UK, the UK stock market outperforms, then we think that there will be capital flowing down into the mid caps, small caps, and ultimately micro caps, which then lead them with their upside potential to start generating much more attractive returns. So as I say, I'm more excited than I've been for 30 years, partly because I think the UK stock market's outperformed. It already has. The FTSE 100 has already outperformed over the last 2.5 years. But most particularly for many of the smaller micro caps, which have underperformed up to now, to have a catch-up trade, but also to deliver premium returns in the next sort of 5 and 10 years. As I say, the risk-reward ratio looks unusually attractive at the moment.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's great to hear somebody of your sort of like experience and longevity in the market saying that, you know, you're optimistic, particularly for small and micro caps, because I say with the dividends they're paying and the potential for capital appreciation, then that's absolutely fabulous. And I would sort of highlight, say, to investors is to go through some of the ones we've talked about, because there's some excellent valuations and cash generative businesses just in that. So thanks again, Gervais, and look forward in touching base in about 6 months' time.
Thank you very much, Paul. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.